This is Jake Jopling with the Entrepreneurial Mindset Podcast, where I interview industry leaders to show how an entrepreneurial mindset is a critical aspect of success in most endeavors. Today I'm interviewing Sandra Ryman. Over 6 years ago, Sandra founded Sandra Ka David, a company that creates globally conscious luxury handbags and jewelry inspired by the city of Cartagena, with products designed in Pittsburgh and handmade in Colombia. The company is also dedicated to supporting and hiring women that face difficult circumstances living in dangerous cities within Colombia. Sandra raised over $37,000 on Kickstarter shortly after starting her company, with an initial Kickstarter goal of $20,000. Sandra Ka David has been featured in media outlets such as The Today Show, Glamour, In Style, Vogue South America, Good Housekeeping, and LA Fashion. Sandra, how's it going?
Great. How are you, Jake?
I'm doing awesome. Really excited to learn more about your company and the amazing things you've been doing over the past several years. So let's go ahead and get started and just start out with your background. I know you grew up in Colombia and you've had a passion for fashion for quite a while. And I didn't mention in your introduction, but you've had quite an impressive background in banking and marketing. Can you talk a little bit more about your prior background to Sandra Ka David?
Sure. I mean, my entire career was in banking, almost 17 years, I would say. I had been in banking. I'd only been in banking just like 12 years, I believe. No, 11 years or something like that prior to me starting down this path. I was always into turning around branches from a profitability standpoint. So I would literally, my job was to go to one, two or three branches at a time and turn them around from a profitability standpoint. And then after that, I did it for so long. I ended up going back to grad school. I took a year off, went back to grad school. And after grad school, I actually ended up this was not part of the plan, but I ended up working for a friend of mine who at one point was one of our customers, somebody that introduced to a pretty big angel investor who invested money in his company. And I ended up working for him in marketing. And so when I was working for him in marketing, I learned an awful lot about, you know, what it takes to be a marketing. I mean, I was a director, but I definitely didn't earn the title. I knew nothing about marketing when I got there, but it was very, very interesting from that perspective. And I learned an awful lot that I was able to then later on apply to my company. And then while I was in grad school is when the idea happened upon me to start this company. So I don't know if you want any more details about that, but yeah, I mean, that's my background in banking is pretty extensive, but it's all in like on the retail side, 100%. And it really was understanding the components of managing the branches, like small franchises.
Okay.
And managing to like a profit and loss statement and really understanding, you know, what the gaps were and how do we address those gaps and how do we make them grow.
Okay.
That was my job for my entire career before.
Okay.
Now.
So it sounds like you got your idea when you're in grad school. You worked for the angel investor and you got experience in marketing. Can you talk a little bit about how that idea came about in grad school and then how you got the ball rolling with Sandra Ka David?
Sure. So my husband and I were having dinner one night and over a glass of wine, he just posed the question. He's like, you know, if you had limitless resources, what would you do now? And so I told him, I said, well, I mean, you know, you're probably going to know what I'm going to say, but I would love to design handbags and launch a company that sells them. And that's when we started to go down the path of, well, how would you do that? How much money would you need? And so when we started to draft out, like when people say drafting out a plan on a cocktail napkin, like that was literally me.
Uh-huh.
And And he was asking me all kinds of questions, you know, given his role, his job. He was almost treating me like one of his clients. And we came up with an amount that we felt, you know, if you can make something happen, right, if we can make something happen here, and it doesn't work and we lose that amount, then we're not going to lose sleep over it. Again, that's the banker in me. Like I'm not taking limited risk or calculated risk, I guess. So that's kind of how it started. And literally the next weekend, I was going to Colombia for the weekend.
Wow.
And yeah, I did that throughout grad school. I was constantly traveling to Colombia to try to find a team. Yeah.
So you said he was treating you like a client. What is his background?
He's a he's a foundation executive. So he helps organizations, like nonprofit organizations in particular, leverage the funds that he awards them to do things that will either make a company sustainable or allow them to execute on something that could be very impactful to the community. But the plan is what's the most important part of it, and having the capacity to execute, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot more that he does that I don't really understand or know, but that's
well, sounds like you did something right to help you get started. And before you knew it, you were on your way to go into Colombia. So can you talk a little bit about the early stages of traveling to Colombia and kind of the key turning point at Sandra K. David in terms of spreading the word or sales growth once you got started?
Yeah, so I started going to Colombia over the weekends, primarily to find a team. Like I knew I did a lot of work behind the scenes before going just because I knew I had such limited time. And I had a specific travel budget that I was not going to go over, right? So I created budgets for everything. And so I knew I needed to get in a certain amount of visits. I needed to get an entire team established, and I needed to find somebody to help me run that team down there. And so the first time I went, I thought I had found this woman that was going to help me, and all she saw was dollar signs. And I just didn't like she wanted to go into a lawyered up contract. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. And second person, the person that I had also interviewed that was like the most humble, but had a really great story himself and a lot of years of success in the industry and totally didn't even care about providing me with a contract. He was just more interested in helping me. And so I ended up going with him. And now, you know, he's the person that's since then continued to manage my team in Colombia, and he's awesome. So I found him, and then I knew that there's a group of people specifically in Colombia growing up. I remembered, and I'll tell you the story in a minute, but I just remembered somebody talking to me about this specific group of people, but they lived in Nariño. And I still remembered that. Like many years later, I still remember that. So in one of my travels, I didn't do enough due diligence. And I ended up going to Colombia. And in Cali, I was, you know, part of that trip, I needed to meet with these people. And so I traveled all the way to Nariño, which was a few hours by car. And
where was that location? You broke up.
Sure. Sorry. Nariño.
Okay.
And it's N-A-R-I-N with a little tilde.
Oh. Okay.
And so I, you know, when I traveled to Nariño, it was like a few hours away. I got there and I got a hold of a woman who told me, well, you know, Nancy Gonzalez, who's also one of the big designers. I mean, she is it from Colombia. So her handbags sell like for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I mean, she's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. She's like, she brought all of those people, all the artisans to Cali, which was where I had come from.
Okay.
So I had driven from Cali. So I said, okay, so can you connect me with one or two or three or whatnot? So she gave me the name of two, right? And on my way back, I called them and one of them picked up and I asked him if he could meet me for coffee. I was leaving tomorrow, but, you know, I would make coffee work really early in the morning, or if he could in the evening. And he met me that evening, and I kind of told him my story. And they're such awesome people. I mean, he was just like, yeah, I'm willing to help you create your prototypes, whatever you need, you know, just let me know. So I brought him my sketches, and I said, you know, I don't have the leather yet, but this is what I'm looking for. So he created some prototypes out of plastic. And then the next visit, I needed to find a leather place, like a place that could produce leather. And I had some, you know, specific criteria because of the quality that I need. So we look, you know, my partner in Colombia helped me. Like, I literally spent two visits looking at every possible leather place. And very last visit, I said to him, like, I cannot waste another visit. Like, I cannot come back to do this. I must find something before I leave. And so he said, you know, there's a small little place. It's really far away. But they deal with like big guys, like even Gucci, who's Italian, even they import from him and guess. And he's like, I don't think they're going to take you. Just to be honest, no one knows you. You're too small. They have large, you know, minimums. Like I just don't think that's going to happen. I'm like, take me there. So we went and, they let us in. And the guy who is like the patriarch of the family who owns this company was there, and he's since passed. But when I met him, he was so excited to tell me his story. So I just started off by telling him a little bit about what I knew about him. And I just, you know, built somewhat of a connection where he was so proud of the company he had established, which was the lifeblood of that community, literally. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a story about that in a minute. But so he gave me a tour, and then I told him a little bit of my story. And then I said, you know, I know I'm probably too small for you, to take on. But you know, I'm very, very bound on all of my product coming from Colombia, and I know I can get great Argentinian leather. I totally do. But I know that there are certain places like yours that has really amazing quality, super high quality leather. So if you would ever consider taking me on, here's kind of the baggage I come with. And so I told them, I said, I can't order large quantities. I'm a very small company and I have a really tight budget. And I need like the highest end quality that you have.
That's a big ask.
Yeah, it is. And I said, I'm willing to pay 100%. Like, I don't want any discounts. I know you give, you know, your company's 2% discount if they pay within 10 days. I'm like, I'll pay before for the leather, like before I even get it. And I will not take a discount whatsoever. I will pay full price. So he was really kind and he's like, all right, we'll try this. And they've been my leather producer ever since. And my partner was like, I can't believe you just made that happen. I'm wow. Like, you never know if you don't ask, you know, but you have to, because you don't come with, you know, like I'm not a big guy like Gucci. Like if Gucci goes away for them, it's a big deal, right? So mm-hmm. I'm not your, you know. And I did say to him, I'm like, you know, you have to also have a mix of smaller people like me, because A, you never know how big I can get. And two, because if you lose your biggest client, what are you going to do? Like, how do you manage that? How do you handle that? So that's like the banker in me, right? Negotiating. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't doing it knowing that I was 100% right at that time, because I really was like, so like if I went tomorrow, they would be okay. Uh-huh. It would take like hundreds of me, thousands mm-hmm. of me for them to be sustainable if they lost one of their biggest clients. So it's not like I was making a huge dent by any means, but it helped me get in. So that's what I needed.
So it sounds like you really made a special relationship with this man, and through your story and also learning more about his story. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. So it's him, and he actually was working with his son, who I also built a relationship with. And he was going to turn it over to his son, but he literally worked until he died at that factory. He was absolutely so devoted, and proud of his company. And when I walked in there, here's how I knew that. So when I walked in there, there were probably, it was like 100 bicycles, hanging on racks. And so when you walked in, you just saw all of these bikes. And so I turned to my partner and I said, stupidly, I said, does he also make bikes? This is really confusing. And he turned to me and he's like, he started chuckling a little bit. He's like, oh, Sandra, please don't ask him that. I'm like, well, what are they? Why are they here? And he's like, well, I'll tell you the whole story later, but those are his workers' bikes. And so what it turned out was that he was literally it. He was the only lifeline that community had. It was a small town. There was not any kind of pavement. I mean, it was all dirt roads. You would see like cows crossing the streets. And all of the, there was one little mini market type thing that carried like nothing. And him, and he was like, the lifeblood of that town. Everyone worked for him in that town, and it was a very small town.
Wow.
So literally, if he went away, the town would suffer. Like, they wouldn't know, you know, where else to get a job. So that's why he was so proud of his, and I really connected with that story. So yeah, I mean, he was an amazing man, amazing. And his son is doing such a great job too. I connected with him as well, knowing that eventually, hopefully, if I, you know, was around with my company enough, long enough, I would end up working with him. So I thought it was important to build a relationship, which has benefited me tremendously when I've been in tight situations. So
so it sounds like you formed a really valuable relationship with a supplier early on in the founding of your business. Can you talk a little bit more about what happened once your business started going, and maybe a critical point in sales growth once sales started to pick up?
Sure. So I got very lucky before. So in May of 2012, I was at an award show, and my timeline. So I work with very strict timelines, and it's the banker in me. I was set to launch my website by September of that year. And a few months prior, in May, I went to an award show with my brother, who's in that industry, and like the fashion and beauty industry.
Okay.
And so he asked me to attend, so I went with him, and I happened to take my and this is where, honestly, I'm not the greatest at marketing. At that point, I really was not seeing its value. So ignorantly, I took one of my bags with me, the one that's currently called the Juliana. And it wasn't intentional. It wasn't like I was going to track down I didn't even know who Juliana Rancic was at the time. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to track her down or anything. And in fact, the bag had been named the Sam, which was, it's my husband's name.
That's a little bit different name.
It is. It literally was going to launch as the Sam. And so while we were there, my husband was talking to several celebrities, you know, because he sees them every now and again in the circuits, you know, that he works in. And talking to this person, and he brought her over to introduce her to me. I knew she had to be famous. I just knew by the way she was dressed, and it looked like she was either presenting or receiving an award. And I had the bag with me, and she comes over and she asks me, where'd you get your bag? That's a great bag. And so my brother chimes in, because he knows, like, I'm too shy to say anything. And so he chimes in, and he's like, she's actually launching a company in September. This is one of her prototypes. And I literally just, like, I didn't know what to say. And so I just said to her, I'm like, So I can give this one to you. It's a prototype, but it's actually exactly like the real ones that are coming. And I'm like, but they're not coming for a while. So she's like, oh, that's awesome. Well then actually she said, where do I get my hands on one of those? And then that's where I said, I'll give you mine. So I emptied it out and I gave it to her. And then Wow. She was like, don't you want a picture? And I was like, oh yeah, sure. Absolutely. So we took a picture. And then, I posted it. I posted it on some social media. I don't know if it was Facebook. I can't remember. It was probably Facebook. And, literally within a 3 week time frame, I had 200 orders.
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't even know what to do. So I literally started emailing these people. I'm like, I can't fulfill all of these. You're going to have to wait probably anywhere between 12 and 18 months. And I went, through how the orders came in order. Mm-hmm. And I emailed all of them and I said, I'm so sorry, but you're kind of on a wait list. I don't know if you are not willing to wait. I'm okay with that. They all waited.
Wow.
Yeah, it took us 12 months. No one had to wait 18 months, but they waited a year to get their bag.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's kind of how we funded the first couple of years of our company. It was really it taught me a lot in terms of like the power of celebrity. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm not one to pay. Like, we've never paid for a celebrity endorsement ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just won't do that. But we've definitely had some celebrities that have gotten our bags and used them, or have actually purchased our bags and used them. So that's awesome. So we either gift them a bag, which I guess you can consider paying, but honestly, it's such a, like, I just refuse to pay like the thousands of dollars for people to promote my product.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and again, I'll send them a handbag if like they're, somebody reaches out to me, like their stylist or something. I'll send them a handbag.
Well, that's an amazing story to get started and get 12 to 18 months of business going. Were you able to make that time frame of delivering within 12 to 18 months?
Yeah, so we didn't even wait 18 months. We got it all done in 12 months.
Okay.
So that was good.
Nice, awesome.
Yeah.
So also, I wanted to switch gears and ask you about another thing that you did on Kickstarter in 2013. I don't know if this was after Julia Rancic or before. Can you talk a little bit more about how you planned out that campaign and the reasons for the success of the campaign?
Yeah, so we had it already as part of our plan, and we almost didn't do it. But we decided, why not? We're just going to do it. My partner, who is a marketing genius, honestly, like she's the one that's really good with marketing. She created the whole plan. Like she she was very good about, she's kind of type A like me, but she's very good about laying it out. We came up with like the various, ways to produce, you know, the different levels of contribution and, the story. We created a video and she wrote it and directed the whole thing. And it was a really nice video that they made, that kind of told our story back then. And she also was very good about her approach to marketing us and having it go pretty wide. So, you know, that having a marketing background, she does, like, a really strong, that's all she's ever been in. And she's as old as I am. So she's been in the industry like, you know, 16, 17 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So she really is the one that should take all of the credit, not me. But she did a really great job with it. And, we exceeded our goal. I forget, to be honest, this is embarrassing. I forget how much we made, but we definitely, I think we set out to make like 20 grand. And I feel like we made 40. I don't remember.
Right. Online, it said on the website 37,000. I don't know if it peaked out or if you got more after that.
Well, we definitely got a lot of business after that because there's a finality to the time frame, right?
I see.
And I think a lot of people might have been like going back and forth and they decided, oh, I'm going to get it. So we definitely got some sales afterward, but I don't know how much that was.
So people that didn't make the Kickstarter funding, they're like, oh, I'm going to reach out and see if I can still try to buy something.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Interesting. So it sounds like everything's been awesome since you've started the company, and wanted to highlight maybe a challenge that you've had. And I know you've been in business several years, and you've seen a whole bunch of ups and downs. What would you say has been your worst investment financially since starting Sandra Ka David?
Sure. So, I mean, I'm pretty conservative given my background. So taking risk to me, I don't have an appetite for it. But my partner, who is, again, she's brilliant. She realizes we have to take risk if we want to grow. So in the spirit of that, we've tried a few things. We actually had a company, Zulily, reach out to us at one point and ask us to, if we wanted to be part of what they do, and they explained it to us. I looked into it. I thought it was great. I'm like, all right, well, we will not give you handbags, but we'll give you some jewelry. And the amount that they wanted us to invest, I was not comfortable with. But I said, you know, I'm willing to invest $4,000, and if we lose $4,000, it's not going to break our company.
What was the initial number that they wanted you to invest?
I think it turned out to be closer to 15,000 or something. Like, they wanted us to have all these units ready and available to ship. And they were so confident that was going to happen. And I literally negotiated. I said, listen, we don't need you. But I'd be willing to do this as like a test, just to test the market or to test this approach. I've never, you know, we've had connections to QVC, and the terms just were not good enough for me to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And so we dropped that deal. And, you know, you might be onto something. It sounds like you guys are doing really well. But for me, I'm not at a point where I'm willing to invest $15,000, whatever it was. But here's what I am willing to do to test it out. And so they lessened our time frame, but they at least put us out there. And I don't even remember how much we sold, but not nearly enough. Like, it was just a few items that we sold. And in a few days, they kind of reached back out and said, hey, this is not going to work. You're not selling stuff. Your stuff's selling.
So it sounds like you made the right decision to just do the smaller order.
I would have been stuck with it. Yes. Yep.
Wow. So that was probably a good lesson learned, to just test these companies whenever they promise the world and they, you know, they can't deliver, or they often can't deliver. So that's an interesting story. So want to ask you a little bit more about your finance experience, and how you would say finance and banking, your experience in financing and banking has helped you to grow your company.
So I think, intuitively, it's made me a better negotiator, because I often find myself having to do that. But in a sense, I think that understanding, like, what levers are important, how to manage risk, how to put things on a timeline, how to manage losses, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. really important too. And manage your controllable contributions. Like, I really do manage that stuff internally tightly. And a lot of times it comes down to what level of risk do we want to take in terms of, like, inventory? How much inventory should we carry?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we predict, based on our sales last year, what incremental growth should we expect this year?
Mm-hmm.
Price points, like, really understanding what spread do we need for every product for us to generate a certain amount of profit or revenue. So I guess just understanding all of that, if I had not had that background, I would be all over the place. I wouldn't know how to do pricing, you know, points. I wouldn't mm-hmm. understand. Like, I wouldn't be able to do any of that stuff, I don't think, if I didn't have my, you know, background.
So it helps you understand profit, your profit margins and financial forecasting, how much money you're going to need over the coming months. And
yep.
to plan for that.
Rates, all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, switching over to the marketing aspect, you said that your partner is a genius marketer. I think her name's Yuling Chang, if I pronounce that
yes.
correct. correctly. Yes. Can you talk a bit about how that relationship came about?
Sure. So my husband and her husband became very good years ago. They're in the same industry, I guess. I don't know. The nonprofit world.
Okay.
Foundation world, actually. And so Greg, who is Yuling's husband now, met Yuling, you know, several years ago, and he introduced us to her, and I just thought she was amazing. She's just so smart, and so she's just great. And, you know, we started talking one day, and she wanted to help. And, you know, I've had a lot of people approach me about investing in the company and being a part of it, but it was just never right, you know. But with her, I felt I could trust her. She's so much to bring to the table because she's very knowledgeable. And she's just so genuine. Like, she's just awesome. She's super honest. And just her ability to connect with people. I mean, she knows everybody in the world to begin with. So If I need something filmed, she's like, oh, I can have so-and-so do this. If we need to fix something on the website, that doesn't necessarily need to go to our web design guy, she can have somebody do it. You know, anything. Like, she just knows it all. So she's been really, really awesome from that perspective. And so she decided to become my partner, and I asked her if she just could just run everything. Uh-huh. You know, pretty much the only thing I wanted to do was to sketch and obviously maintain the relationships in Colombia and supply chain. Like, that would be what I would take on. And if she could take everything North America and beyond.
But when you say run everything, that's partially because you're also working another job at the same time, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I am. Yes. So I'm a current regional vice president for a bank. So I oversee, at the moment, I'm overseeing 30 retail bank branches.
Okay.
So, which is, you know, what I told you earlier, I did my entire career turning around all those branches. I now have to do it, but at a larger scale, like 30 branches at a time.
So you're running all those branches, and that's a full-time job. And then on the weekends and evenings and whatever other times, you're helping to build Sandrika David and doing all the sketches and interacting with Yuling Chang.
Right. Yep.
So you're pretty busy.
Yes.
So awesome. Yeah. So it sounds like your partner's a great marketer, and you guys are doing some amazing things together. And wanted to ask you about something that we haven't brushed upon at all yet, which is one of the key initiatives you have at your company with helping women in dangerous cities within Colombia. Can you elaborate on that initiative?
Yeah, so there was an issue in Colombia. I mean, I shouldn't even call it an issue. It really is. I don't even know what the right word is. I mean, it really is troublesome what's going on in Colombia. And all of these women who had suffered losses, like their husbands were murdered, with their children, and they never worked. The government was seized all of their assets, so they had no assets. And oftentimes the families would shun them. And so they're turning in droves to the churches for help. And the government tried to create this program, and it just never took off. But the churches are now kind of taking on this challenge because they can't afford to feed and maintain these families. So they're turning to business owners, small business owners, asking them if there's a way that they can help these women, you know, learn a skill that can then help them provide an income for themselves and their kids, some sort of stability, right? And so I overheard a conversation while I was in Colombia with my partner and his priest. And when his priest was gone, I didn't understand fully what the ask was, but I asked him out of curiosity. I'm like, hey, what's this program about? What's going on? So when he told me, I said, you know, I know we have a budget. With full transparency, he knew exactly where every dollar was coming from. So I said to him, I'm like, look, let's add this amount to the budget. Let's bring them on board. Let's pay them. We'll teach them a skill. I don't know what that's going to be, right? Because we work with these artisans that they're the only ones who can make the handbags. And I don't, you know, we can't teach somebody a 30-year skill mm-hmm. in 12 months. Like, it's just not happening. But we could teach them something small, like, I don't know, glue stuff. I don't know, right? Like, you'll come up with that. I have no idea. I've never made a handbag. Mm-hmm. So we'll add that to our budget, and I will figure out where we're going to take away from. Like, I'm not even concerned. We'll figure it out. Let's just get them on board right away, and I'll tell you how many we can afford to bring on. So I got back to him, and I said, let's bring on 4. And the goal will be that every year now I'll plug this into our budget so we can bring on another 4 and then another 4. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So up to 18.
Wow.
And yeah, and it's been really just inspiring. I mean, it's just been amazing. Like, I remember going down one year and meeting them, and the one woman just broke down crying, and she's like, you know, you really saved my life. Like, I was not going down the right path, and because I felt complete desperation. And so that to me was like a turning point. Like, my goal changed. Like, it changed from it being, you know, because I really wanted to make a ton of money with this company. Mm-hmm. But my goal changed to making sure that every year I have enough on reserve to be able to hire more women.
Mm-hmm. And so these women that you hire, you said you're teaching them a skill. Like, what is one skill that you might teach someone that you bring on board?
Yeah, so interesting. So they do. So at the edges of some of the leather, like to make them look more polished, they've learned. And this actually was a skill that's very valuable in Colombia, and it took them a while. But we paid them while they were learning, so that was good.
Okay.
But they've learned to seal the edges of the leather so that you don't see where the leather comes together. So it's
okay.
They learn to seal that. They'll do a lot of the quality checks. Like, if all the bags are sewn together. So if there are little pieces of thread or something that you see, they singe those off.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have learned to glue the inside of the bag, like the lining.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they clean everything and store it properly, and they also help with shipment. So we wanted to make sure, though, like, they're not going to do shipment anywhere else. It's because we are so small. But we wanted to make sure, you know, the goal was to teach them something that they can apply at any leather good manufacturing company, or in our case, we're not manufacturers because we make everything by hand. But mm-hmm. Like, they could go to a shoe place, or they could go to a belt place, or they can go to another handbag place, because now they have these skills, and we can't afford to keep them on board all year round. It's okay. Only during our seasonal stuff. So that's why it was important for me that if we did this right. Like, we're not going to just do something for them or teach them a skill that only applies to us. So that, believe it or not, that, you know, seaming of the bag, you know, the little thing they have to apply, that, you know, I don't even know the term for it, it's so bad. That was very, very valuable, because so, that's, you know, what they've been able to do.
So that's really interesting. So they can seal the edges of leather. They can glue inside the purse. Everything needs to be done by hand, obviously, because these are really expensive, high-end purses, and it needs to be right. You can't have stuff messed up. And once they master that skill, during the down part of the year, they can go and work at those other places and transfer those skills. So even if you hire, you know, 10, 20 people over the long term, they can go off and continue working at other places within Colombia for a lifetime, it sounds like, with these skills.
Yeah. And what we've done, we've gone a little bit further. So part of the process, too, that I challenged my partner in Colombia was, you know, we can only pay them, you know, certain times, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll pay them whatever we budgeted for. We'll pay them, you know, which was really like 3 or 4 times what anyone gets paid in Colombia.
Okay.
But I said, you know, my challenge to you is to help them get connected people in the industry that they could potentially work for.
Okay.
And he's connected because he's in the industry. He's connected to all those people. So we found work for all of them, every one of them.
So it sounds like you're building a platform where these people not only have a job and they're getting paid, but it's almost like a career school where they have connections to connect them to the next opportunity long term.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Well, want to shift gears back to the company and to some challenges that you had at the company specifically, and wanted to ask you currently, what's the biggest challenge you face to grow Sandra Cadavid?
You know, we recently changed our model. We used to be in boutiques and in stores. And, you know, after reading a lot about the where people are now shopping and how they're shopping and trends, we decided to go a different route last year. And so we started to invest in creating a platform to be able to sell directly to a consumer. So I don't know if you're familiar with like the likes of Rodan and Fields.
I've heard of it.
Stella and Dot.
Although I don't shop there a lot.
So these companies hire women, or men if you want to produce, like their own marketing for the product, to source, like to tap into their own network, to have them try the product. I mean, it really is. And it's through virtual trunk shows and it's through actual trunk shows at home or at people's homes. Mm-hmm. And the return on that investment is pretty significant. So we tested it last year and it really just by comparing it to the many streams of income that we have or revenue, I should say. That one was the strongest and we tested it with like 3 people.
Okay.
And so realized like this is where it's at. This is where imagine having 100 of these women. Mm-hmm. But to grow, it's a lot of work. Like it's definitely a lot of work. We have a specific type of person that we want to do this. So right now it really is about building up our network very specific to this and drawing our referrals from the women that we currently have, but also adding to the team women that, you know, we connect through LinkedIn, mm-hmm. Essentially, or at specific events or bloggers or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So if I'm getting it right, you're creating these kind of sales agents, like you have somebody that lives in New York City and they're really into fashion and you give them a platform to sell your bags through, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Pulled out of stores because the stores were like, you know, it was almost a deterrent to try to attract these women because that's one of the first questions or learnings that we had during the first phase of this pilot where these women did not they wanted to make sure that we were not in a store that they would be, you know, competing with.
Right.
In their own city, you know, so we pulled out of all the stores except 2 because we do well at these 2 specific stores.
Okay.
Or boutiques. But so we pulled out of the boutique industry and we're stores. And we really just don't deal with them anymore that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like you've shifted your business model. So you're not trying to get all your jewelry and handbags in stores or department stores all over the country. Instead, you're having independent sales agent helping to grow the brand, essentially.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And to do that, it takes time, right? Because you've got to reallocate your funds and invest them differently. And then it, you know, you bring on less inventory. And so it's hard to do that and to really secure like a really tight strategy. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll grow significantly over the next, you know, 6 to 9 months in terms of how many people are out there selling our stuff.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like a more scalable strategy right now at this point, as opposed to trying to get massive quantities of merchandise into a place like Nordstrom or Saks or something like that, because that requires a much larger investment, right?
Yeah, in fact, we were so funny you said Nordstrom. We earlier on, we did talk to Nordstrom, and you know, there is a small investment up front in terms of like their coding of product. I don't know, you had to invest in a system, and that was like 10 or 15 grand. I don't even remember, it's been so long. And then you had to invest in your product. Like, we had to have, they had such strict timelines. So we had to definitely have an overflow of product. And then you had to invest in, and then in addition to that, if you didn't sell your product in 30 days, whatever they didn't sell, they would send back to you. So wow. It was so risky. We were tempted to do it because we sold at Henri Bendel many years ago and we did really well. So it was tempting. But I'm like, when it comes to risk and you have to invest $100,000 in something, it just scares me away.
Yeah. I mean, that's financial risk.
Right.
That's what you know best, it sounds like.
Right. Right. So, yeah.
Interesting. So how do you see you've been, I guess, in the fashion industry for what, 5-6 plus years now at least. How do you see the fashion industry and the jewelry and handbag industry changing globally over the next 5 years?
So, you know, the millennials are going to have within the next couple of years, they already started, in my opinion, they're going to have the highest purchasing power. Mm-hmm. And it's more than exponentially more than we've seen in any other generation, you know, because these are the kids that are buying and selling tech companies for billions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. Or heirs to, you know, the baby boomers' mm-hmm. wealth. So with that in mind, you know, they want a frictionless experience. So our website has to be on point. Their ability to purchase something has to be like really effective. And they want to hear a story, a compelling story. So we have to get more creative with our, the way that we tell our story, because I feel like we don't always do a great job, and mostly me, on telling our story, but it is really impactful. Like, I'm one of those people that, you know, if I help someone or if I do a kind deed, I just don't talk about it because I feel like then it defeats the purpose. So
It's kind of bragging.
Right. It's hard for me to do that. So my partner is a lot better at it, but I feel like it's important. If we really want to see our brand grow, we have to tell our story. Mm-hmm. So I think that the millennials, what's important to them is not just like frictionless experiences, but connecting. Like, they don't care about the brand. They're not going to care if, you know, I'm an unknown brand. I have price points that the quality's not there, which won't be the case. But if they say to themselves, I'm investing, you know, $400 or $500, if the quality's not there, I'm contributing to something good. So it makes them feel good about it, right? Mm-hmm. If they get a product and all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, bonus, this is awesome quality, which it will be 100% of the time, then it's even better for them. And then they're return customers. They're not like brand, they're not like brand addicted, label addicted, like our generation was. So they appreciate value. They appreciate a great story. Like, they are so eager to be philanthropists in some way, shape or form. So I feel that's, you know, that's the approach we've got to take, is make sure that group we target with our story.
Interesting. So you see everything transitioning to millennial purchasing power, and the story behind the brands that they buy need to be a lot more powerful in the future. That's what it sounds like.
Right. Right. And the big box, no one is going to, right? So the Nordstroms of the world are seeing a huge decline. You know, all those big box, like, they, if anything, they want to invest in something unique or a small boutique, or they find everything online, by the way, but you know, a unique story, something they can connect with.
Well, makes sense. Really, really powerful stuff. Really interesting information. I want to go get started in a moment with our high impact short response question, Sandra. Let's just take a short break and we'll be right back. Hey guys, if you'd like to stay up to date with what's going on with the podcast, the episodes, and what's going on with our community, please like our Facebook page, which is listed under TE Mindset. Again, the name of the Facebook page is TE Mindset. Please check it out. All right, we're back with Sandra for the high impact short response questions. What is one hobby that you have outside of your primary work that we don't know about?
I love to ski. I love to ski all over the world.
What is one health or nutrition hack you do to help you be more productive at work?
I do juicing, and I stay away from soda, anything soda, or any kind of energy drink.
Okay. What is your number one strength that helps you succeed in your everyday business interactions?
I would say it's probably my ability to connect with people.
What is your top tip for increasing business profitability?
I think, I mean, one way to do it would be to become a solid negotiator. I guess, yeah.
Improve negotiation skills is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I've now, you know, knowing where you're at, right? So there's limitations. Like sometimes if you have to determine the value of what you're getting back and know that you have to give a little if you don't have any clout. But as you start building a brand and building some clout, then you can start negotiating a little bit differently. I think just really understanding how valuable it is that you know, that you need what you're going to get. Like how valuable is that product or service to you? Mm-hmm. What is it worth? And what are you willing to give up to get it? Yeah. And I also think too, if you're going to make an investment, go into it from the perspective of you're going to lose that investment, so that if you do lose it, you're not like, you know, you have to sell your house or another asset, you know, like you just really have to be, which is probably not very entrepreneurial, right? Because we're supposed to say, I cashed in my 401k, I sold my home, I live out of, you know, my parents' basement. And those people end up being billionaires. So I'm not a billionaire, I will tell you that. But for me, that's how I manage risk. I have very low risk tolerance. So
negotiation skills and mitigate financial risk sounds like your top two.
Right.
If you could recommend one resource under $20 to help listeners learn more about fashion, what would you recommend?
There is this great blogger. It's called The Fashionista, or Fashionista, I would say, and it's Leandra Medine.
Okay.
So M-E-D-I-N-E, and she's really awesome, and she's very well balanced with health and fashion.
And you said that's Fashionista. How do you say her name again?
Leandra, and it's L-E-A-N-D-R-A, and then Medine, M-E-D-I-N-E.
Okay, Fashionista, Leandra Medine.
Right.
All right, last question. What does an entrepreneurial mindset mean to you, Sandra?
You know, honestly, it really means to me, if you're really passionate about something and you really want to make it happen, like you just have to jump all in. Like you can't wait a hot second to get started, because by the time you start planning and you start thinking about what you're going to need and what you need to do, and you go, you know, 2 or 3 years into it and you still haven't gotten started. Entrepreneurs just do. They don't really think, they just do. And then they end up learning a lot along the way, right? Instead of doing a ton of research, like Like if you're really passionate about something, you know enough to be dangerous about that, you know, what you want to do, just do it.
Be passionate and just do it. Well, awesome, Sandra. That's the end of our high impact questions. How can listeners learn more about Sandra Cadavid or connect with you?
Sure. So they can go to our website and send us an email or send me an email directly at Sandra@SandraCadavid.com. And they can also look us up on Facebook.
Awesome. So Sandra@SandraCadavid.com, or you can look up Sandra Cadavid on Facebook. Well, it's been a pleasure, Sandra. I really enjoyed this and learned a lot, and lots of great stuff.
Thanks, Jake. I am so glad that we connected. Thank you for having me on.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed my interview with Sandra Ryman. If you enjoyed this interview and you'd like to stay up to date with future episodes of the Entrepreneurial Mindset Podcast, please check out and like our Facebook page at TE Mindset. Again, I welcome you to check out and like our Facebook page, which is listed under TE Mindset.